I'm Ryan Ranker, filling in for Tara again, having one step closer to 2026. It is almost here. Good morning to you, Lee Rogers.
Good morning, Ryan.
I'm going to throw this out, and I know it's a long shot, but do you think perhaps the amount of fraud uncovered in 2025 could surpass the amount of collected for tariffs in 2025?
That's a darn good question.
Statistically speaking, I know we're talking billions in tariffs or hundreds of billions, but still, if you compile that upon everything else that they've so far found in 2025, not necessarily have recovered, but have found, that number's going to be like, okay, this can put up a fight.
Well, so far, we're just talking about Minnesota, and as I said the other day, I think this is rampant everywhere across this country when you've got, you know, federal grant money and things that are being funded with little or no oversight, and there are incentives, basically, for people to abuse the system.
Right. Well, with DOGE and all these other things that they uncovered and contracts that they cut and people that weren't doing anything and, you know, government jobs that were unnecessary, all these different styles of it, not necessarily fraud, but we'll put waste and abuse also in that same category. I just keep wondering how further this is going to go, and will the pressure ever get to the point where Governor Walz will feel the need to accept responsibility? Because politicians are never responsible for anything. Obviously, they have no part in anything when things go bad. So obviously, Governor Walz has nothing to do with this. So, I mean, we shouldn't even ask the question, but back in the day, there used to be a thing called integrity. Yes. And when there was integrity, you accepted some responsibility for the faults when you're the man in charge.
Yeah, when you got caught with your hand in the cookie jar, you you admitted your faults and you know, took your punishment. But those days have long passed this country.
No. Well, I mean, if you have a governor with stolen valor, I mean, on top of that, when it comes to the shame side of things, that maybe he's gotten post-shame part of his life.
As we say down in these parts, that horse has left the barn.
Did you see that story? And I saw this one posted online. Spartanburg man arrested in connection with death of a 65-year-old roommate, and they fought over food. And I was looking at this story. It's kind of interesting. There was a 63-year-old and a 65-year-old, and apparently they got into an argument over food, which led to a fight inside the home. While they were struggling, it sounds like one tripped and fell, injured themselves to the point where later, months later, at a nursing home, ended up dying, and they said as a result of the injuries of the fight. So the 65-year-old roommate is the one that died. The 63 now arrested in connection with the death of the roommate. And I thought, is this what getting old is like? It's just like you're one fall away and that's it? Is that what I have to look forward to?
Well, hopefully not. You know, I hope that you don't run into the balance issues that some of us of a certain age start running into. But, hopefully you won't be fighting over food with a roommate.
I hope not either. I mean, my wife would get mad at me. I don't know if she would ever fight me over it, but she would make my life miserable in other ways.
You might be wishing for the fight just to get it over with.
She's like, Ryan, are you kidding me? You ate the whatever? And then I know, oh, man, I'm in trouble. Yeah. Oh, boy, she's not letting this one go. Yeah. At the very least, I mean, she'll remember it and bring it up at the worst time. Well,
the one good thing about the new delivery services for some of these big box companies, maybe if you eat the last item that she was hoping for, maybe you can order one and get one delivered very quickly.
You know, speaking of the delivery services, that's a game changer in our household. We get groceries delivered to our house. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So the regional chain appears Kroger. I don't think they get down south.
Yeah, we have some Kroger around here. Some.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Okay, well, they're very popular here, and you can do the delivery to your house. You sign up. It's a monthly, a yearly fee.
Yeah, you can do
and
that.
And it's very affordable.
Yeah.
Well, I love it.
Yeah, we do that with the Walmart around here, and the one thing that I really like about that is when we order groceries online, that means that when instead of going to Walmart, where my wife will always stop by the clothing section and the household goods, we only get groceries. Yep. So saves me a little money there.
That's good. You know, saving money, saving time, too. There's some New Year's Eve events
and frustration.
Getting canceled.
And frustration. Yeah. I just for the life of me can't figure out what's wrong with this country. I guess it the people that I run into in the highway that don't know how to drive, they also don't know how to go down the aisles in a grocery store anyway. So between that and the automated floor scrubbers and the people that are trying to fill the orders for those who actually ordered online. Yeah.
It's yeah.
A lot of traffic.
Well, there are, I guess, threats for New Year's Eve in major metropolitan cities. And I know New York City is going to go on. They're mm-hmm. still going to do the ball drop in yeah. Times Square. But there's a lot of other larger cities that, out of concern of safety, they've decided to cancel their New Year's Eve celebrations for tonight. And I was looking at New Year's Eve in Times Square. That looks miserable.
Yeah,
I just don't understand
desire.
The appeal.
Yeah, I don't either. No desire. It's cold. It's crowded. It's New York. I hope to visit someday. I really do. I really want to go to New York at some point so I can say I've been there. My wife's been there a few times, but I'm just – for New Year's Eve, no way. No way.
So you're saying I just – one day I would like to be experienced getting mugged. I would just love that and well, get it out of my system.
Yes, exactly.
If anywhere, the best muggers are in New York, so I want to get mugged by the best or get scammed by the best. You know, so I'm just going to give it a try. Go to the Big Apple. But people tell the story of going to Times Square where you have to camp out early to get a good spot if you want to see the actual ball drop. And they say some of the tricks they use is wearing a diaper. So if they have to go to the bathroom, they don't have to give up their spot to go and come back because they know they won't get it back.
Oh, boy.
What do you think of that?
That's
a bunch of diaper wearers. Like, so when you're – if you're, like, staying up tonight and watching the ball drop, look around at all these happy people smiling, but understand there is a soggy bottom to every one of them.
Could be.
It's so gross.
There's an image we didn't need this morning. Thanks, Ryan.
Every single one of them. Now, if you're part of the broadcast, you'd have your own facilities, I'm guessing.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
If you're working it, that's the only way I would ever consider doing this. If there was some sort of, okay, I don't have to stand shoulder to shoulder, hip to hip with everyone else.
Yeah,
what do they call that?
In the media, they call it the green room before you go on. Maybe they have the brown room for us. They need to relieve themselves.
And all these people that are doing it, like the Ryan Seacrest, and you think about all the people that are part of the broadcast, these are like high-end broadcasters that make multi-million dollars a year. You know they're not pulling out the Port-a-John for these guys. These are, like, I'm sure, legit facilities for them.
How much longer are they going to call it Dick Clark's New Year's Eve? There's people watching don't even know who Dick Clark is, or was, rather, I should say.
Forever. Like, who's the Casey Kasem? They still run his radio countdown.
Yeah, the Casey Kasem's top
radio
40.
Stations.
Yeah. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
Ah, Casey Kasem. They're going to run that forever, too. Because of the rights. Once you sign the rights away, they'll keep going and doing that forever.
See, maybe they could use AI and bring him back, and also Dick Clark, too, you know?
And we can have them fight.
Well,
and to see who is the ultimate.
Over food, yeah.
From the beyond, yeah. Lee Rogers, happy New Year to you. Looking forward to working with you on this last day of 2025.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Coming up after the break, the Minnesota fraud investigations continue. We'll kind of give you the latest where that is, and I got a few things that I want to bring up from that. I'm Ryan Recker. If you want to text the show, it's very easy. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line, 800-905-0989. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Tara Show on WORD. Checking out some of these text messages that are coming in, and feel free to send us a text message. I'd like to see them. Enjoy from the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line, 800-905-0989. One person said, been to New York twice, never again. Okay. One person said, when they use the diaper, it warms them. Okay. So you're saying that there's two purposes for it. Okay. One person said, the large ones hold up to 24 pounds. New York, New York. I think Sinatra would sing about that. Holds 24 pounds. The other one is use AI. Forget about Casey Kasem. Bring back Rush Limbaugh. There's no way you could ever replicate Rush Limbaugh through a computer. Just not possible. He is a one and only, perhaps the greatest of all time when it comes to radio broadcasters. Not just talk radio, but radio broadcasters. It's going to be hard to top him. He's definitely on the Mount Rushmore, Rush being emphasized there. So I wanted to catch you up on what's going on in Minnesota, and there's a lot still to try to unpack here. But the latest here, surge of federal officials in Minnesota is following new allegations of fraud by daycare centers run by Somali residents. This is the AP's copy of it. President Trump previously linked the administration's immigration crackdown against Minnesota's large Somali community to a series of fraud cases involving government programs, in which most of the defendants have roots in East African countries. So here's what I think was going to happen with all of this. They're going to investigate it. The state of Minnesota is going to sandbag, meaning they're not going to turn over all of the materials. So what you'll have is the federal government demanding these things. Turn this over. We need this information. Minnesota will say, well, we need to protect our immigrants. We need to protect our citizens. So we're going to just send you some of the information, but not all of it. And then the federal government is going to say, we're not playing this. We're going to put in an order for you to do this. And then it's going to drag out in courts. I bet you they do that because that's what Democratic states do when it comes to the Trump administration and the government. And we see this, like, even in the state I'm in right now. I'm in Michigan. Between the two states, I guess I'm glad I'm in Michigan. Minnesota seems there's a lot of problems with policing there, too. So at least here in Michigan, we don't have that as much. But let's go back to what I saw here. There was a lot of problems when it came to voter rolls in Michigan. You had people, and I mean lots of people, and perhaps if you look at the percentage of registered voters versus the people that are eligible to vote in the state of Michigan, the percentage of that was higher than those eligible to vote. So someone was saying, oh, that's weird. So they put into implementation, you need to purge the voter rolls, meaning take the ones out that are no longer eligible. We're talking people who have died, people that don't live in the state of Michigan, people that are cannot be confirmed, wrong addresses, all of these things. And this was something that was supposed to be implemented before the last election. Didn't happen. And a lot of people are questioning, why didn't that happen? Well, they said, oh, no, we have to do this in accordance of this and that. And it was all a big lie. They finally purged these things after the election. Federal government came in and said, I need a full report. You have to give us your people who are eligible to vote in their information because we need to confirm that people who are ineligible don't belong there. And the government in Michigan said, no, we're not giving you that. So the Trump administration has to fight for it. The Secretary of State, super liberal, had to come out and say, well, no, we're doing this to protect our people. Well, as it turns out, she's in violations of the Civil Rights Act. What the government was asking was for them to comply with the Civil Rights Act. And they don't want to comply with that. So it's a big hassle when it comes to voting in Michigan. And they are sandbagging and trying to hide all of these things. So why am I bringing this up to you? Let this be a crystal ball to what I think is going to happen in Minnesota, because you have the same sort of liberal type of people that are in charge, like Governor Walz. And what you're going to find is they're going to enable and sandbag and try to prevent these the federal government from coming in and making sure that, well, A, only legal eligible voters are the ones that are voting, and B, only the people that are eligible for these programs are the ones that are getting the money, not fraudsters who are ripping off the government to the tune of billions of dollars. I don't trust the Minnesota government is going to do the right thing naturally. I don't think there's any reason to believe they're going to do the right thing naturally. Even if the courts have to get involved, they're going to wait till the very end and maybe still defy it and try to change the parameters of what the government's going to be asking for, which I think is why the federal government needs to look at this and say, we're just going to step in and we're not even going to bother with you at this point. If you're not going to hand this stuff over, we're going to have to do it ourselves. And that's how we expedite this thing, because people are angry that billions of dollars in fraud was probably happening with your knowledge and you did not step in to stop it. The surge in federal officers, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Noem and FBI Director Patel announcing the increase in operations in this week, you're definitely getting a surge of ICE in Minneapolis and Minnesota, trying to go door to door in the sense that all of these different businesses that are under question for not operating but accepting millions of dollars, that, okay, now we need to find out who's operating these things and we need to open up the books immediately. Under Minnesota, there's been a spotlight for years for Medicaid fraud, including $300 million pandemic fraud case involving the nonprofit Feeding Our Future. Prosecutors said in the country's largest COVID-19-related fraud scam that dependents exploited a state-run, federally funded program intended to provide food for children. In 2022, under President Joe Biden, 47 people charged, number of defendants grown to 78 through that investigation. So also cracking down on some of the other perhaps questions of, okay, when it comes to voting, what do you mean you're vouching for eight people and then we're going to allow this to happen? That doesn't sound right either. That sounds a little bit strange, isn't it? So all of these balls are up in the air being juggled in Minnesota. And on top of this, you have Donald Trump trying to end the year, creating peace deals with these other countries. You have him trying to save lives by getting junk off the street and these drugs that are being trafficked into here. You have illegal immigrants coming in. And while, let's not forget the urban development, housing and urban development, and how much money was being given to people that weren't eligible for these programs, tax money that wasn't allotted to anyone but the citizens of the United States to help them with housing. And this money was going out and not used correctly. Meaning there was fraud involved. There's just fraud everywhere. And going back to this past summer, you have Elon Musk opening up and looking at this Doge and saying, we found fraud, 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 fraud. And what do all these liberals do with it? They said, oh, no, they're just making this stuff up. Oh, this is all a scam and they're just targeting groups of people and this ain't true and that ain't true. But the more they go into it, and I'm glad they're following down this path, that we can't just let it sit with, okay, we discovered that there was millions going out, no services rendered, and the kids weren't actually having a place to stay. That was the intention of these programs. They're saying, no, we need to find out who was involved, who was responsible, and who's going to take responsibility for this. Is it going to be stopping at these owners, these shop owners? Are there going to be deportations? Are there going to be criminal charges? Or does it go even further to say that, let's say, the governor knew for the past multiple years that this was going on, but decided not to act on it? Okay, why didn't he act on it? So now you have motivations. And does it go even further for criminality, meaning can you bring charges for responsibility of this? And what other lawmakers may be involved? So I didn't even get to play one clip, but maybe we'll do that after the break, because this is an important topic. Or, we're going to have to save this maybe later, too, because we do have a guest coming up this hour. His name is Richard Bino. He's a political historian. He's a friend of mine. And I'm always so proud, because every time I turn around and look at Rich, he is on television. He is doing different appearances, network television, radio appearances. I've known Rich for a while. And what's nice about having a political historian around is that you get to talk about things that happened a long time ago, and the guy knows his stuff. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation as we get ready to close out 2025. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. Don't go anywhere on WORD. And welcome back. Happy to be with you. And happy to spend this New Year's Eve with you. Joining us now is a political historian, author you can find online, Rich Rubino. Welcome to the show this morning.
Thank you so much for having me on, Ryan.
I say this all the time, but I truly am so proud of all the work you're doing. Every time I turn around, I see you on TV, and you're on News Nation here, and you're doing a radio show here, and you're doing a TV news program here. I've got to tell you, Fox Nation, you've done so many great things, and you always make time for us, so I truly appreciate it.
Greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
So we're coming up to 2026, and it's kind of interesting because outside of Grover Cleveland, you have a non-consecutive presidential term with Donald Trump, and we're looking at the wrap-up of his first year of his second term, and I was curious how that plays out with other presidential second terms. So after they get reelected, they come into office, and it's almost like they're a lame duck immediately, but not really, because there's a lot of activity this past year. How would you look at Donald Trump's first year of his second term and compare it to other presidents? Because it seems like there has been a slew of activity and there seems to be no slowing down.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. And usually in the second term, what happens in the first 2 years of the president of the second term, the president tends to overreach, and then they generally get checked in the midterm elections. You saw this certainly with Barack Obama. You saw this with George W. Bush. You saw in their midterm elections, the second midterm, they end up losing. The only time we've ever had a non-consecutive term, a non-consecutive president, of course, was Grover Cleveland in an 1894 presidential election. The Democrats ended up losing more seats than any party's ever lost in the House of Representatives in American history. In terms of actually being active and getting things through, he does have a Republican Congress, though it's very marginal. And he has been able to get his legislative agenda, including the Big Beautiful Bill Act, I think, passed. So he's worked very hard working with the Republicans to try to get it through. But again, his job approval is currently under 40%. Usually, the second term presidents they have low job approval ratings, and they tend to suffer that in the polls. I think Trump's trying to preempt that by what's going on in California and in Texas rather. With they're trying to gerrymander the districts and trying to make it so that there are five more Republicans, and Gavin Newsom is trying to do a tit for tat in California. We'll see what happens with other states as well. But you're right. Generally speaking, the president tends to overreach, and then they tend to get checked at the polls.
Yeah, and midterms are going to be a big one. Here's what at least with Donald Trump, it sounds like if you were to do the polling right now, things wouldn't look great for Republicans because the optimism is low, but going into next year, 2026, and I'm sure this is strategic, and you mentioned the Big Beautiful Bill, there's a lot of tax incentives and things where perhaps the economy could be really set to boost. And it seems like when things are going well, and particularly coming off a period where things didn't feel like they were going well and weren't going well, once you have that comparison, that it's a little bit probably more friendly for the incumbent if things are going well at the time of the midterm.
Yes, oh, absolutely. And you certainly do see this oftentimes. They try to pack it so that the legislation tends to benefit people right around the time of the midterm elections. There's no secret to that. I think that it will be interesting because obviously people tend to vote. A lot of people tend to vote their pocketbooks and wallets respectively. So you'll see where it affects them right around the midterm elections. I think if the economy is proliferating and people do at least feel good, because obviously if how you feel and the perception of the economy is as important in many respects as how the economic situation actually is from an electoral standpoint. We'll see how Donald Trump does. We'll see how he does on the midterms. But from an historical perspective, the sixth year of a presidency, the party almost invariably loses seats in the House of Representatives. And if he were to lose the House and lose the Senate, it's harder for him to lose the Senate. But if he were to lose the House and to lose the Senate, then he would have a check in the last 2 years, and he would have to do a lot of certainly foreign travel, a lot of executive orders that potentially he could do. But in terms of getting legislation passed, that would be a very austere challenge for him.
So this may be a little bit adjacent to political history, but I'm curious about presidential libraries, because there was a report, was it the New York Times or one of the reports were talking, I think President Joe Biden was trying to raise $200 million to get his presidential library off the ground. But according to the New York Times, only a small fraction has been fundraised so far. So now they're looking at, because of the poor fundraising, consolidating his presidential library with some other institutions that are already constructed, meaning they're going to try to implement it or, maybe take over a wing of another building as opposed to a standalone. So when it comes to former presidents and putting this library together, when did that start? Why do they have presidential libraries? And have there been any stories that come to mind about them?
Yes, and really a lot of it goes back actually to Rutherford B. Hayes and his son, Webb Hayes. And they worked to formulate the first presidential library, which is in Fremont, Ohio, to commemorate Rutherford B. Hayes. And it's interesting, actually. Rutherford B. Hayes is, of course, a legend. And do you know what country he's very popular in?
Oh, you told me this story before. Yeah. Was it? It's not Brazil. Where was it?
Close. Argentina? Paraguay.
That's right.
Because when he was president, he negotiated a deal, or at least had his Secretary of State, William Evers, negotiate a deal that basically between Paraguay and Argentina that benefited Paraguay. So consequently, there was a young student who was in a coma for 2 years in a news station, said, "What we want to grant you a wish," and their wish was to go to Fremont, Ohio, to visit the Rutherford B. Hayes Presidential Library Museum. So that's a little bit of trivia about Rutherford B. Hayes. I know you've all wanted to hear about Rutherford B. Hayes today. But and then after that, Herbert Hoover had a library, has a library out in Iowa. And then other presidents, and it's pretty much become kosher for a president of the United States to have a library. Pretty much every single president since Herbert Hoover does have a library. Interestingly, the Gerald Ford is the only one who has a separation between his museum and his library. They're two different buildings. There's one in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is his library, and then his museum's in Grand Rapids. And the reason they do that is because when he was in the House of Representatives and became minority leader, he promised that he would give all of his papers to his alma mater, the University of, I mean, to the University of Michigan, where he was his alma mater. And so he gave the papers to them, but then he became president, so he didn't want to take the papers out. So he said, we'll make a library as a museum as well. And they had the museum in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So he's the only one who has two separate ones in Michigan.
That's interesting, because when I drive by on 23, there's a sign for the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library. I see it all the time. The sign's right there. And I knew it was there, but I've never stopped to visit it before. And I'll tell you this, Rich Rubino, if I ever become the NFL MVP of the Super Bowl and they put a microphone in my face and they ask, where do you want to go? I'm not going to say Disney World. I'm going to say the Rutherford B. Hayes Presidential Museum. That's where I'll say I want to go.
Yes. I think that's what, if you were in Paraguay and you were a young child, that would be your dream, would be to go and visit that place. Absolutely.
I do want to go there, and we're close to it, Fremont, Ohio, to where I live outside Detroit. So I could technically, in a couple of days, go visit the Ford Library, and I can drive to Grand Rapids after that. Then I can go down to Fremont, Ohio, and make a swing back. That could be a couple of weekend trips for me.
Yes, and I actually have visited the Ford, not the library, but I have visited the Ford Museum in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's a very nice facility. That was where he represented in Congress for 25 years. Was the Grand Rapids area. So it's very nice. Kind of a rather a small facility, but and you can go in there, and I have fond memories of it.
That's great. Do you mind holding on after the break? We'll continue our conversation.
So, by the way,
if people wanted to look you up online, maybe find your books, where can they go?
Yep, you can go to richrubino.com. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to Amazon and type in Rich Rubino.
Political historian Rich Rubino, someone that knows, I would say, 99% of political history. If you were to stump him, it would shock me. We're going to continue with him coming up after the break on WORD. We're coming into 2026. Okay. This is what they call bad broadcasting. We go into 2026. Is there anything that you're looking forward to, or anything that you might see on the horizon that's politically unique? Something that you're like, wow, I don't remember the last time that's happened.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Something that's unique. And well, I think that certainly the midterms, because we've never had this in our life, and anybody that's alive's lifetime anyway, we've only had one example of a midterm election that's of a non-consecutive president in the 6 year. And that, of course, was Grover Cleveland in 1894. In 1894, the Democrats absolutely got swamped in the polls. I don't expect it to be anywhere near, if the Republicans lose the House, to anywhere near as many seats as the Democrats lost that year. But that would be something that I would be looking for. And I'm looking at the 13 Democrats who represent congressional districts that voted for Donald Trump last time and how they do in their reelection bids. As well as there are three Republicans who represent districts voted for Kamala Harris. One of them, Don Bacon from Nebraska, is retiring. I'd be interested to see how those other two do. And then I am interested in seeing, it's not really unique, but I'm interested in seeing the potential 2028 presidential contenders and how they play out 2026. And what a lot of them are doing, is general protocol, is you go out and you campaign for members of your party like a good soldier. And you go around the country, collect chits, meet with the donors for another reason. The reason you're doing that is you're supporting your party, but obviously it's going to benefit you at the end. And I think that that's something that I would certainly watch to see what candidates are supporting and how vociferous the Democratic presidential candidates are on the campaign trail.
Okay. Well, let's look at this because, we're coming up to the new year. A lot could change. They're already doing early polling for the next presidential election. Has there
always ever
been a time where early polling was accurate? I don't think there ever has been, but can you think of a time when the early polls actually were correct?
Yes, I would say George W. Bush in 2000.
Okay.
If you look at it, when he was running for re-election as governor in 1998, there were already polls showing him that in 2000 he was going to be the Republican presidential nominee. This was very early. And then in 1999, he declared his presidential candidacy. He was a front runner. Interestingly, a lot of people in those polls, when they said Bush, thought it was the father, which benefited him because the father was relatively popular at the time. But he ended up running. He did relatively well then he won the Iowa caucuses, but then he ended up losing the New Hampshire primary to John McCain. Then he lost Michigan to John McCain, Arizona. So they ran a pretty spirited campaign against each other. But in the end of the day, George W. Bush did land up becoming the nominee and then becoming the president. But that's one example of somebody who I think was the early front runner and landed up winning the nomination. I'm trying to think of other examples in history of somebody who was perhaps an early front runner who actually did land up winning. I mean, I think that if you go back to recent history, I think certainly, I mean, Hillary was ahead of Barack Obama. And I think Bill Clinton was kind of an unheard of entity in 1990, 1991, when he was thinking about running for president. So I would say George W. Oh, another example would probably be, because he was the former vice president, would be 1984 with Walter Mondale. He was the early front runner. He landed up running into some headaches with Gary Hart running against him, but he landed up winning the nomination. Bush would be a perfect example, I think.
Can you think of the opposite, one that was an early front runner and just flamed out hard, where you're like, whoa,
oh, yeah.
The fall from grace?
And there are examples of that, too. George Romney in Michigan, governor of Michigan in 1967. And he was ahead by about 11 points, not only of the Republicans, but of Lyndon Johnson, the Democrat, who was supposed to run for president in 1968. And then he did an interview with a television station in Detroit. And they asked him why he was opposed to the Vietnam War, but he was originally a supporter of it. And he said, well, I was in Vietnam. I had the biggest brainwashing by the diplomatic corps and the diplomatic general than anybody could have ever had. So basically, he's admitting that he can be brainwashed. So that did not go over very well. And they asked Eugene McCain, and then he landed up losing in the polls, and eventually he never really recovered. And they asked Eugene McCarthy, one of the Democratic presidential candidates, about George Romney's comment. And Eugene McCarthy responded that he was brainwashed. He responded, a light rinse would have sufficed.
Yes. Well, I want to make sure people know how to find you, because other than turning on their TV and seeing you on a regular basis, where else can they go?
Yep. You can go to Rich Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O on Facebook, or you can go to Rich Rubino, P-O-L on Twitter, or you can just Google my name or go to richrubino.com and you can see some of my interviews there.
Fantastic. Every time I see you posting on social media, doing different appearances, you're all over the place now, and it makes me so happy when that happens. I remember how much joy it brought me. It was election night last year, and the TVs, and you know, I'm working in the newsroom, and all the TVs are on different networks, and there's you for like a half hour on election night. I'm like, I know Rich. That's my friend. And it made me so happy.
Absolutely.
I'm telling everyone. Well,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining
exciting.
Us.
Thank you so much.
And
I greatly appreciate it.
I know 2026 is going to be a great year. You're going to continue to go down the path of your fame, and I'm sure hopefully it works out all for all of us. So appreciate you, and Happy New Year.
My pleasure. I really appreciate that, Ryan. Thank you so much.
Make sure to look up Rich Rubino. I have his books. They're fantastic. I bought one of his books for my dad once, and I had it directly shipped from Amazon straight to his house. And my dad has that up on his shelf still, which is really cool. So I would recommend anyone here listening, look up Rich. Maybe find one of his books. And I'll tell you, if you like little bits of political trivia, or maybe you just want to find something that new that you didn't know, that would be the way to do it. All right. If you want to reach the show, you can find us on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line, 800-905-0989. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. Don't go anywhere on WORD.